as we start to get out of
Yeah, all right, good afternoon, colleagues. Welcome to the Thursday, November 6th, Participatory Government Council meetings. We are going to call ourselves to order here and begin with our land acknowledgement. And I'm wondering if we have anyone who would like to volunteer to
land acknowledgement.
Go ahead, Valerie.
Land acknowledgement. We acknowledge that we are on the unceded ancestral homeland of the Ramaytush Ohlone, or the original inhabitants of the San Francisco Peninsula. As the indigenous stewards of this land, and in accordance with their tradition, the Ramaytush Ohlone have never ceded, lost, nor forgotten their responsibilities as the caretakers of this place, as well as for all peoples who reside in their traditional territory. As guests, we recognize that we benefit from living and working on their traditional homeland. We wish to pay our respects by acknowledging the ancestors, elders, and relatives of the Ramaytush community and by affirming their sovereign rights as First Peoples.
All right, thank you so much for that. And then we're gonna now move on to our roll call.
Heather Burt, present.
Bella Palm,
present.
Jay London,
no.
Malinami Villalobos.
Present.
David Navarro. Jaya Hall. Rhea Salasa-Cullen. Michael Snyder.
Here.
Mary Brave Woman.
Here.
Jay Fox. Julian Mahua-Doc.
Here.
Joe Reyes.
Here.
Chris Coffey.
Here.
Cynthia Dorr.
Here.
Joe Lepstra.
No.
And Lisa Cooper-Rubin
here. And we do have a quorum.
Yes.
So we're going to thank to the approval of our agenda that you all had a chance to review it. But if there are any questions, corrections, I do want to note that we're going to take one item out of order because of the overlap with our Board of Trustees meeting tonight. That we will have, believe it is our budget committee updates will come out of order prior to new business. Prior to old business.
Move to accept the agenda with that recommendation.
Okay. By Councilmember Lobos, seconded by Councilmember Brandt, that we adopt the agenda with the noted change in order. If we could have our roll call vote.
Roll call vote.
Anna Brett?
Aye.
Bella Palm?
Yes.
Jay London?
No.
Malinami Villalobos?
Aye.
David Delgado?
No.
J.R. Hall?
Aye.
Maria Salasa-Cullen? Michael Snyder?
Yes.
Mary Brave-Woman?
Yes.
Asha Fox? Julian Mahua-Doc?
Yes.
Joe Reyes?
Yes.
Joyce Coffey?
Yes.
Theodore?
Yes.
Yes. Are there any opposed? Any abstentions? The agenda is adopted. Thank you. We'll move on to the approval of our October 16th minutes. Open up the minutes.
All right, you can see it there, but not there.
So moved.
Second.
Right, it's been moved by Councilmember Kong and seconded by Councilmember Reyes to adopt the minutes as presented. Any other discussion? Hearing none, we'll do a roll call vote on adopting the minutes as presented.
Better Breath?
Aye.
Camila Kong?
Yeah.
Jay Lanton? Delezani Developos?
Aye.
David Delgado? J.R. Hall?
Aye.
Maria Salazar-Colin?
No.
Michael Snyder?
Yes.
Mary Brave Woman?
Yes.
Marcia Fox? Dylan Mahuata?
Yes.
Joe Weyers?
Yep.
Chris Coffey?
Yes.
Cynthia Dorr?
Yes.
Noah Lifestraw?
No.
Lisa Cooper Wilkins?
Yes. All right, seems fantastic. So we have it. Oh, sorry. Any opposed? Abstentions? All right, hearing none, we have adopted the minutes as presented. And we're now ready to move on to public comments on items not on the agenda. So if you have members of the public that are here or online that would like to make public comments. Or council members.
Councilmember Braverman.
Thank you. Yes, I just wanted to take a moment and just for appreciation of the classified staff and the new gardeners. Beginning of the semester, I'm not sure more folks have been added on, but cycling cleanup has been much better. Building where I work. Which also helps keep down in the plus, and just yeah, it's just on the grounds around. I understand we have two new gardeners, and it's just so needed. And all of it, especially with everything we're facing, any little thing to help us morale. So just acknowledge that. Like, maybe that comes later, but I said it.
Thank you. Other comments, and I don't believe that we've received anything in the PGC email in advance either. All right, so we're now ready to move on to our chancellor is here, Dr. Kimberly Messina. We also received prior approval of the recommended BPs and APs that came to the council and were recommended to move forward, including our prior presentation of the student equity. So, but I am turning the floor officially over to Dr. Messina.
Thank you. How are you all today? Good. It's a long week, I know. I wanted to share a little bit that I'll also be sharing with the board this afternoon, but it was a really busy week this week and a very positive one. We had, for the first time, City College was invited to attend the ongoing meetings that the mayor has arranged with education leaders, union leaders, class healthcare leaders, businesses, et cetera, and as well as his team to share best practices and information regarding all of the potential issues with federal immigration. So it was really great to be at the table there and to be invited on a regular basis to those meetings. In addition, we had our City Build graduation, whatever that was, whatever day it was the same day as that meeting. And that was really amazing. It was the largest class, and City College has been a partner in that program for about 20 years now. I had the opportunity to actually hand out diplomas, which was really wonderful. There were some amazing student stories, and I was thrilled to see nowhere near half, but a significant number of women graduating from those programs, which are, as we all know, is an industry that's been pretty male dominated. The mayor also was there and commended City College as well. So that was a very positive experience. And it's been a lot of internal slash external things, but that was sort of a combination of both. I also wanted to say that two things I got to do yesterday. I was very grateful to be part of the workforce meeting here. And
My phone is talking to me on my watch. I don't know why it's doing that. I wasn't asking it. Which was great because it was like right after that city build, which is a big part of what they do, and seeing a lot of new apprenticeship opportunities for through City College, including some peer mental health support apprenticeships, which is great for the students who are in those programs. I wanted to, I'll finish with awards and recognition so I don't forget. We had a great visit with the VRC yesterday. The amazing work that's being done there by our team for our veterans is just so impressive. And on Monday, our very own director of the VRC is getting honored by the mayor at City Hall in honor of the anniversary of the Marine Corps. So kudos to him and to all the student workers and all the teams that are, you know, serving our veteran students. So that was really great. Happy to answer any questions that anyone may have.
Any questions for the chancellor or comments from council members, either in person or online? Raised hands. Any members of the public with questions or comments for the chancellor in person or online? I'm seeing no raised hands, so we thank you for your time.
Well, thank you. I want to hear the rest of the recognition.
Absolutely.
I like it.
All right, so we're going to move on to the next item on the agenda, which is the awards, recognitions, kudos, or gratitudes. Yes, Councilmember Villalobos.
So I will first like to recognize and congratulate our own Councilmember Amelia Kong for getting accepted into the nursing program. Congratulations.
Impressive.
I also want to give kudos to Zenaida. Zenaida is the owner of the Demais Pupusas restaurant that we have here at HBB. I was able to give a tour to her. She requested a tour and I gave her a tour. She wanted to learn about not only the campus, but the services that we provide, because she has a lot of students coming through her spot and she wants to give out information. Nice. One of the things that she does already is she goes to food banks, gets food, and distributes it to students here because she feels that it's her students, her children. And so I really want to commend her. We shared it last Friday that what she's doing here changes students' lives, especially during this food insecurity time frame. And so I wanted to acknowledge her work that's probably not been seen, but it's seen by students. So thank you, Zenaida.
Other council members with those awards, gratitudes, and I'm looking online as well. Any members of the public who would like to share them, whether they're here or online? Well, thank you. We mentioned earlier that we would take an item out of order, so I want to give Dr. Ligioso a chance to give his report.
You see, well, can we stop? Yeah. Pull that up, attachments.
Yes. Is there any way to also display it on other screen?
Let's see.
You have our CTO.
I know.
It's one of the things.
Got it. She knows.
Unless it's anything else.
That's the attachment. Is there the PowerPoint also?
Oh, thank you for putting it. She wants the PowerPoint.
Oh, the PowerPoint.
Yes. I swear I heard him ask if popcorn was available, but
I know.
That's That's the monthly.
Oh,
because that's sent that to you.
I want to see if I have it. Okay, let me just double check. Sorry, everybody, give us a smile.
It's on the.
Oh, is it?
The first one?
That's not.
No.
Yeah, hold on 1 second. I will try to grab it.
The attachments are the details, but
I'll share them right now.
From the details, if you guys have an inclination late night and have nothing else better to do, feel free to put the 311 and or a monthly report.
Sorry, give me 1 sec. Oh, wait.
But perhaps maybe I should have said something under commendations.
He sent in the email to me.
I think I sent it.
He sent it to me, so I'm going to try to open it.
Oh.
It's just taking a minute. It doesn't. It's also really... Try this again. There it is.
So maybe I should start by really recognizing the finance team at the McMillan's work. Being able to get this completed in a timely fashion. Submitted the annual 311, which is a financial report that we submit to the state 24-25 by September 30, which is 2 weeks in advance of the deadline. And so for those of you that may not know, the annual 311 or the CCFS, Community College Financial Statement 311 is a regulatory report that we file on an annual basis in addition to the quarterlies. But this sort of encapsulates our activity for the entire year. Maybe you can scroll to the next page. This is where some of the highlights are. And the way the report is set up, it has some compliance figures in that and then also the activity for all of our funds, revenue expenditures, and fund balances. Here's just some of the highlights. So again, we filed the report timely. 50% law, we fulfilled and exceeded it, 51.45%. And essentially what that is we have to account for current cost of education in relation to total expenditures, and it has to exceed 50%. It's an old law that harkens back to K-12, when we're still part of K-12. Unfortunately, it does not include support services, support faculty like counselors, librarians, and non-teaching time in the numerator. They're all part of the denominator. I know as a state system, we've fought to try to change that, haven't made any headway yet. So all you see in the numerator right now are the salaries and benefits of teaching faculty and the teaching aides. So we met that this year at 51.45%. The GAN report is an appropriations limit report, and we have to stay within that appropriations limit. And essentially, the way the calculation works, it looks at last year's, looks at the change in population, basically a change in FTS, and then ups it for CPI or COLA, and that sets the new limit. And then it looks at the amounts of funding received in apportionment and property taxes, and all of that has to stay within that limit. And we met that limit. Here's just some highlights, and that came up in the middle, right? We're reporting out that we finished the year 24-25 at 20 plus million in surplus, and that a budget plan for 25-26 expects a 4 million plus surplus. We do have the report on lottery, and so we fully spent the allocation. And on the EPA or the educational protection account, we also fulfilled that requirement, and that is allocating and spending instructional salaries on those funds. The last sort of item that's noteworthy is the state asked us about our pension costs. Now, because it's a statewide report, we're the only district that has SFRS. All the other ones have STRS and PERS, right? State Teacher Retirement System and the Public Employee Retirement System. Here we have, of course, STRS, but we have the San Francisco Employee Retirement System, which is not part of its report. But I think all in all, you know, again, we fared well this last year. Again, many thanks to the finance team, particularly on the leadership of ABC Ahmed, and many thanks to also Vaishali Jogi, the Chessmore, you know, some of our programmers that were involved in helping us, our analysts. So it was a overall great team effort in getting us to close this year. Next slide, please. We also reported at the last meeting a monthly report. Right, so that's the 3 months revenue and expenditure activity, July, August, and September. And I noted the highlights here. You can see that our actuals were on the revenue side were only $33 million as opposed to our budgeted $202 million. The principal reasons that our revenues are low is that we received property taxes in December and April, and then a little bit in June, so that's not reflected here, right? And the same thing holds true for our parcel tax. So our property tax is about $62 million, parcel tax about $20 million. So we get those primarily in December, April, and June. So none of that is reflected in there. The EPA, or Educational Protection Account, also only gets paid twice a year. And so that, again, is not reflected as of the end of September. Hence, we show a much lower revenue receipts than what we normally would expect, right? You would normally expect maybe a quarter of the annual figure, but Fortunately, that doesn't hold true. Our state apportions, for the most part, are fairly linear, but these items are not. On the expenditure side, we are also running a little bit lower. When you look at our certificate, for example, that are for the most part full-time, that are on 10 months contract, we only see 2 months worth. And then, of course, we see the remnants of the summer teaching in July. And so that coupled with some yet to be filled faculty positions ended up in lower class certificated salaries. The administrators pretty much track. We had a little bit of savings from positions we hadn't filled yet. So for example, we haven't filled the legal counsel yet, the internal legal counsel, and that's going to accrue towards some savings in the employee side. The classified professional are pretty much tracking. It's a little bit lower, again, because of unfilled vacancies. Our benefits are significantly lower. You know, again, some of that is associated with the vacancies, but the biggest piece is we have a caption called STRS on Behalf, which is the third leg of the STRS. Right? So as a district, we have the employer portion, roughly 19.1%, with the, what the employee pays, of course, their portion, which is not reflected here, but then the state picks up the third leg of the STRS, which is the STRS on Behalf. We generally don't get that figure until the end of the year from the state and or our auditors. And that's roughly $7 million. So benefits expenditures are tracking lower, you know, relative to the total. Some of the other bigger areas that we generally do at year end are other contingencies and transfers out. So you can see then up on top, going back up on top, our actual realized and receive revenues are about $33 million, expenditures paid out of $37 million, and that translates into a shortfall of about $4 million. That $4 million is generally carried by whatever balances we may have in the reserves. So for September, we're actually, quote unquote, sort of dipping into the reserves to cover that shortfall, which will of course be made up as we continue into the next quarter, because that's where we're going to realize much of the taxes, the property tax, parcel tax, EPA. Next slide, please. Here I wanted to share that we're about to start in earnest 26-27 budget development process. We've already been in discussions with VC David Yee. He's identified the faculty positions that have come through the faculty prioritization process. We're working with Kristen Charles to see if there are any unrestricted resource needs that have been identified through that process, so we can fold that into the 26-27 budget. The way we approached it last year, and we want to continue that, rather than doing a roll of a budget, we're working with each of the divisions, and I'll use instruction as an example because that's probably where we see the most layers, is we work through the VC, who works with their respective deans or directors, who then work with their chairs, who then work with their faculty to build up the non-personal side of the budget. And then we're working with the respective area deans, managers on verifying and validating the position control file. And that's the permanent people. And so that process worked really well last year. I think we went a lot further than what we did in prior years. And throughout the process, of course, we'll be doing presentations at various groups. Last year, we did Academic Senate, not necessarily in that order, DCC, SEIU, and Associated Students budget updates. And then, of course, monthly updates to our board. Last year, you might remember that we concurrently also did budget workshops, and we're trying to get that reinstated. So I'll be talking to the chancellor to identify some dates. As you might recall, some of you that participated in those, we did essentially an anatomy of the budget. What are the elements of the budget, right? How is our budget built up? We looked at revenues, we looked at non-personnel and capital outlay, as well as personnel. And then the final session was sort of identifying gaps and, next steps. I think that was good informative sessions that hopefully helped constituents better understand our budget development process. Next slide, please. And this is just an update some of you may already know, but the college received their ratings from both Standard & Poor's as well as Fitch, and they both reaffirmed our ratings, right? Standard & Poor's was an A plus. Fitch was double A minus, but they upgraded our outlook from negative to stable. That was really great. And that certainly helped us as an institution as we move forward. And so we hope that in the next cycle, we'll be able to catch Moody's, which is a third rating agency, to do the same. In the last cycle, they essentially held us the same, but they also unfortunately held the negative outcome. So with that, I'm certainly open to questions.
Thank you, Ms. Livio. So are there any council members with questions? Great, any council members online? Okay, are there any members of the public with questions about the presentation?
All right, if we can just pull the agenda back up.
Sure.
Thanks.
Any members of the public? I'm not seeing any hands raised online.
Just to clarify, the intention of this agenda item was to provide information.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
It's the budget committee update under mm-hmm. 9.
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. All right, we're going to go back to our order and scroll up to old business. So Under item 7.1, our thing is a standing item discussion of meeting protocols, procedures, meeting modality, just so that if there ever are questions or updates that need to be provided. Under this item, the only reminder I wanted to offer people, because believe it or not, we're getting dangerously close to finals week, and we will not have a PGC meeting during the finals week. It is not on the calendar, but we typically have a first week and third week meeting of PGC, so we will not have a third week meeting in December, just so any other items, questions, or comments that fall under that item that council members or members of the public might have? I am not hearing any, so we are going to move on to item 8, new business. And the first item, we have our CTO, Patrick Equatote. Am I saying it right? I'm going to get it right. And he is going to give a, and I see Gerard is also online. I'm going to make sure Gerard comes over as a panelist, and they are here to present cybersecurity updates as requested. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. First, let me get my presentation on the board here, but I need to share my screen.
Okay. And then if you need to watch
my thing,
he's going to share.
Yeah.
Hold on one second. Thank you.
Okay. And I'll to be promoted to present it.
Okay. Yeah. You are now. Yes.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Patrick Equatote. I'm the CTO here at CCSF. I've been in this job since last May. It's like drinking out of the fire hose. there are a lot of challenges we are facing. Yeah. Specifically on the cybersecurity area. So it's been a pleasure to be invited, myself and my team, today to present on this very delicate topic. We have Gerard online. He's the manager of the cybersecurity area group. And then Raymond is our engineer, but I'm not sure if Raymond can join us today. I'll be doing most of the presentation by Gerard. Feel free to jump in if I'm kind of not telling the truth or getting sideways. So here we go. So cybersecurity is an ecosystem thing. It's not really a one way of dealing with it. We do a layer approach. So in this presentation, as you are looking at the entrance slide, deck, we're gonna be talking about compliance, privacy, identity, and number of things that create that ecosystem. So one thing I want the audience to be aware of is that we are living in a changing world. There are a number of factors that are contributing to that. So first, I'm gonna play a little game here. I'm gonna show you 3 slides, right? So here we go. And what this means is this. This is the answer. I'm not gonna wait too long. So that's the answer right there. The world is getting interconnected, right? And then another one, okay? So this one is easy. I'll ask question. What is that? Data. Oh. Data. So one factor is that we are getting connected, interconnected. We are using a lot of data. And then the third one is something like this. Thinking systems. are hearing. System themselves, they are thinking. Right. So what is taking us into is the advance of thinking system is supported through interconnectedness and fueled with big data. So that's a statement that, well, that can be said much better by AI, right? So I'm giving you the AI version here, right here. The growing interconnectedness of digital network coupled with the analysis of big data is reshaping industries and fostering the development of thinking systems that can optimize decision-making processes, right? So that's the landscape that we're gonna be operating on. That's the landscape we are trying to secure, right? So first thing is there is data explosion. When you look at the way it's gonna grow exponentially. As you can see this curve, you see how the curve went up, exponential growth of data. So that created a lot more opportunity for bridges, right? Data breaches cost every institution a lot of money. For instance, what we've noticed a lot is a lot of them are coming in also through human error. And that's one of our goals, educating our constituencies and talking to our groups and kind of push forward the culture, the culture of data safety, and so on and so forth. For instance, here you are seeing that each record loss will cost an average $134 in remediation. I mean, we have more than 100,000 records. And if all that got out, we are in big trouble. So the cost is not just money. There are reputation hits. There are all kinds of costs that the institution go through when they get a breach. We've had small breaches here already, baby breaches. I don't want to live to see the day when we'll have a big breach. So that's why we are doing everything we can to plug the hole as we are moving forward. So what we are doing is we are focusing on a number of things: data security, compliance, privacy, data governance. That's why I went back to the ecosystem. One thing, risk management. How are we managing our risks? Identity and remediate critical data risks within the organization. We are chasing things down, trying to understand where there could be a data loss and risk and remediating those things. Data protection, stop threats across the entire organization. We are installing tools that can scan the environment and spot a bad behavior, see if there is a malicious code moving around and let us know there is something going on. We want to review our entire identity landscape. Currently, a number of folks have multiple identities. For instance, when I came on board, I have my Microsoft identity, and then I have my parking identity. I have another account here and there. We can track all of that when we offboard our constituencies. When people leave, we can track them and shut down all the accounts. So one of my focus is to make sure that we can use one single identity and provision all the application of that single identity. So we are working toward that. We'll see how it goes. Information protection and governance. I've been in conversation with folks in research and planning group about data governance and what we can do in that area and trying to organize. But governance is a lot more difficult, very difficult. So as to the community itself, we are doing a number of things, and where the human error comes in is usually through phishing and social engineering. And that usually happens through malware attack, and we download something, and then we get into a situation where there is a ransomware going on. And that's very costly for the district. Another approach is to set up a email, phishing email. We are preparing to do training on that pretty soon. And an email, one of the things I'll get to this slide. Get a PayPal, your PayPal account is getting hacked. Please do something right now. Don't do it. Well, maybe a UPS package was delivered by where at home. Click on this link so that you can get your package. No, you gotta ask yourself, do I have anything in the mail coming in, right? So, example, you can spot these things here and there, but they're getting so smart. So the only way you can spot those things is when there is an urgency, a sense of urgency. If somebody come into your email and say, oh my God, you need to change your password right now, take a break, pause, think about it first. Because they are appealing to your emotion so that they can get you to click on that link and get hacked. There are all kinds of phishing. I'll skip this one. Spear phishing is another one that we want to be aware of, where an individual is targeted and then they customize the phish email for you. They do it to HR people, they do it to business people, and so that they can react, okay? They can react. And another one is whaling. Whaling attack, that's more common with people, executives. Somebody like Dr. Cooper, they will simulate her email saying Dr. Cooper is traveling, sending a request to one of her directors saying, we need you to change the bank account of this thing and send $50,000 check immediately. I'll talk to you when I get back. I'm visiting my mom and she's very sick and I can't be talking to you right now.
$100,000.
Yeah, exactly. So that's willing, right? So very, very clever. They are getting away with it too. Pop-up phishing, you'll be on the web and suddenly something pop up on your screen. Oh my God, your computer is being hacked. We need you to call this number right now. We are Microsoft and this is Microsoft. We're gonna take care of you. Don't call the number, don't. Actually, that one was myself. I was called to assist that. That's when I took that picture. Right, yeah. That number, I actually called the number. That was a hacker on the other end of the line. Right. I said, well, you know, I'm gonna send FBI over. Right. That was funny. The hacker hung up on me. So So again, anything pop up like that, don't call anybody, just ignore it, call tech support and things like that. They are sending it now through your SMS, you know, you're coming through your SMS on your phone, something very clever, click on the link so that you can log in and fix this problem. And those are the things that are happening. People will call you, phishing, we call it, that's a voice. They'll call, they'll say we are in the doctor's office or IRS or the bank or something like that. So those are the kind of things that are happening, especially IRS. You own this, we're going to send you an email. We need you to fill out this form right now so that you can clear your name and those kind of things. And all this situation is is getting worse because of the advent of AI. We are noticing that now we have deep fake getting involved and simulate people, make a video of somebody else and saying something, which is not true. It's all created by AI. And so what are we doing as a defense for that? We are using a number of tools, control policies, a number of things that are on the market, one of which is CIS control. We are working on that. we are using that as a guideline. Another one is NIST 800-171, and the NIST framework is very straightforward. We identify the threats, we protect against it, and then we do detections. Should anything happen, we detect, we respond, and we recover. So there are a number of things we need to learn how to do and make sure that our system can actually respond to any stage there. We are working with vendors that will be scanning our logs and trying. They do have a lot of intelligence in their data centers. They will let us know if they find anything funny and send us an alert so that we can act on those alerts. One other tool we are using is DNS. It's a little more technical DNS protection, where we are using a tool called Cloudflare, and it look at when we click on a link and the link is heading out, it look at it and see whether or not we are going through a good website. If not, it will just cut the traffic and stop it. So we are going to be doing phishing and training campaign pretty soon. We have the tool already. The tool that we purchased is called Know Before. We are doing the configuration, and it will be sending some email out like a spam. And some people will be clicking on it. It'll tell them, please, we just got you. You know, something like this. So people say, oh, okay, then next time. To just get people trained and pay attention and not click on link like that. We're also gonna offer trainings, and I'm gonna talk to the leadership about it first. And the training are very short. We have a lot of module there. When folks wanna go look at it, no problem. They can, once we set it up, any one of our employees be able to look at it. For the students, that's another conversation, because we haven't purchased that yet. MFA multi-factor authentication, that really helps when passwords are stolen. You use the second authentication to kind of protect yourself. That's something we have deployed partially, but we want to fully deploy that, and we want to bring in a better one, a conditional MFA in our systems. Single sign-on, that help with the identity. Again, that will be the single point of entry. It's like my RAM ID. We link all the application, at least most of them, to my RAM ID, so that when you get in through that portal, you can go to any other application. And for our users, what we really hope to do, yeah, I've talked about this, we want to continue the awareness and really create a culture of, a cybersecurity culture where people are aware of what's going on. Right. We want to build that culture to the point where folks know that they need to pay attention to some of the things that are happening. Currently, if I were to rate this institution, we are somewhere around awareness. Some of us are conscious, some of us are unconscious, but eventually we're going to build this in our behavior and potentially into our culture. So what does the future hold for us? The way we think about hacker is a guy in the back room somewhere, but that has changed. Yeah. Right now, we are talking about a cyber organization with different areas, specialty, the fraudsters, the leaders, the scouts, the negotiators, and all that. So they are a lot more effective. And when you are targeted, they can break in. And the nation state are sponsoring them, and so on. And this chart shows that 14% of all the hacking goes to education. So we are not small. we are big targets, and we do pay out. So they are encouraged to keep attacking us. And for them, the whole thing is about return on investment. If it's worthwhile, they will hit us. So that brings us to the password conversation. One single thing we can do is to have a much longer password. This chart is self-explanatory. When you move, currently our requirement is 8-character password. Read a little bit in there. Even if you make it as complex as possible, we can break it in 8 hours compared to 12 characters. So I'm going to need your support at some point. I'm going to ask the chancellor to support 12-character password. At some point, we're going to, because it just makes the whole thing a lot more secure. Yeah, and that's what the industry recommend. And for the technician from my previous institution, all our technicians, we use 15-character password.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And the password thing, there are a couple links here we can try, but just so that we can put it in perspective, when you talk about cracking the password now, the hackers just need to put the hash to another company, another group, send whatever cryptocurrency for payment, and then they're going to crack it and send it back to them. No big deal. But then if the password is longer, then that costs money. So 12 characters is going to be $96 million. They're not even going to try. But look at the next slide. 8-character, just $4.
Beneficial.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, $4, yeah, I can do that. No problem. Yeah. So our approach is that we need to harden the system to the point where we are not the last in the line.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we are the last, the easiest one to pick on, we're going to get picked on every day. So we need to harden the system. So that's the end of my presentation. I'll be happy to take any question.
Yes.
Go ahead. You were first.
I was curious which of these particular tactics might solve for the fake student accounts, the bad actors that are getting into our system.
That's a completely separate line,
mm-hmm.
because of the way they were coming in, right? So they are coming in through CCC apply, and this approach doesn't really align to that. It's a parallel defense we are doing for that one.
Can I keep asking?
Sure.
When you showed that slide of approximately $13 million, but these phishing or mistakes, data breaches had cost, were those CCSF numbers?
No. That's a slide from the internet. Okay. That's an average.
Did you cite that from? No, just kidding.
Yeah, it's in there.
From the internet.
He's in there.
Yeah.
He even cited AI when
he did. He did.
Yeah. Is there a difference between like emails from CCSF that edu and mail.ccsf.edu? Is there a difference on like levels of security on that?
Oh, currently, mail.ccsf.edu is hosted with Google, and ctsf.edu is hosted with Microsoft. That's the current architecture. In terms of security, Microsoft handled the one that is with them, Google handled the other one. Now, in terms of how the password get breaking, because what we've been seeing is that the password are getting out somehow, but in both areas. If a password get out from Google, the hacker will get in and do whatever they need to do. Microsoft, they will get in as well. So it's a parallel system, but this technology that Google is using to actually go through things, and Microsoft will be pretty much comparable.
As far as our Wi-Fi system goes, our Wi-Fi system now, you don't need to be associated with the school, either work here or it's wide open. What would be the difference between a Wi-Fi from here and like a Wi-Fi from McDonald's, as far as security wise?
Okay, yeah. So, normally when you connect to a Wi-Fi, you go through a number of stages. Right now, what we are doing, we are calling a splash page, which is secure, and then you go in. So you are going through our network. If you are in McDonald's, they may have their policy. You may have to accept certain things. They may give you a password. I don't know how that one works, but you go through their website. So now the risk is that when you go to some public places, you can have a man-in-the-middle attack, meaning that somebody can come in there, set up their laptop, and they'll broadcast another SSID and say, I'm McDonald's. Then when you come in there, you think you are connecting to the official McDonald's, but you are connecting to the hacker's laptop. Once you connect to the hacker's laptop, that will be a man-in-the-middle attack, and they can kind of get your data that way.
I'm still on bad actors. I'm sorry. Is your hand up? Because I've
Yes.
already asked one question. Go ahead.
So a follow-up question. I'm sorry if I missed it in your answer. So where's the extra security here on the open network? Because it wasn't always an open network, and historically it was you had to log in order to access the network, but in the last 2 years, maybe they changed it to an open network. And when we raised concerns, faculty raised concerns when it went to an open network, we were told that there was no, wasn't a big deal. We didn't need to worry about it.
Wi-Fi.
The Wi-Fi,
Yeah.
yes. So I'm wondering, so how are we any more protected being on City College's open Wi-Fi network? What's from preventing the scenario that you described at McDonald's happening here?
Nothing prevented.
Okay.
So when I join, yeah, it can happen here too. We can have somebody parking the parking lot and broadcast CCSF. Yeah, it can happen. So when I joined here and I saw that, I'm like, why is it open?
Thank you.
Right. And the answer is that that's how the community want it.
No. Community was
Okay.
not consulted.
We
I don't know which community.
we were not asked.
Oh, we were not asked.
Okay.
I could say it did come to the technology committee, and it was recommended by ITS that we go to the open network. So it did get discussed at some point.
Oh.
Whether or not it went to the wider college, I can't speak to that, but it wasn't an item, and ITS shared with us that they recommended that.
So, well, that's good to hear that the community wasn't is not leaning that way, because for the last 10 years, I've used protected network in Marine. I have different kind of protected network. We use the Grandma ID password. You get your key for 12 months. After 12 months, you need to re-register again. And we use a tool, a true onboarding thing that onboard you onto the network. We can tell all your devices. If you have any issue, you can come in, we do that. But apparently, one additional thing I've heard is that we don't have anybody else here to manage all that flow of requests and maintenance. That is best to just leave it open.
Is that why it was left open?
I have no idea what.
There were a lot of people that came to the technology committee asking for it to be open. Students came, faculty came.
On the basis of what?
I think at the time, the cybersecurity concerns were not as big, and so they thought that it was a barrier for student learning.
No,
You remember this? We
we
were there all those years ago, and it was seen as a barrier, and so that's why.
It's always a balancing act, right?
Yeah.
Convenience versus
Yeah.
protection, right?
Yeah.
So it becomes
But
too burdensome. Who will want to relax the security, right? So it kind of, you know, so we got to find that
balance,
what the balance, right? And I think Patrick wants to rebalance at this moment.
It is, but the issue of equity and accessibility was a bigger issue at that time.
What time?
Students having older devices that were more difficult, and so that was
okay. Sure.
Yeah.
What year was this?
Almost two.
Old.
2019.
Probably 2019.
Four
times, right?
Before the before things.
Yeah.
Just so you know, we have reached time on this item, so we can extend. I just need a multimeter to.
Yeah, move to extend time for another
seconded.
5 minutes.
Any opposition? All right, continue.
Two questions. A question and a comment. We've been getting emails, messages from real email addresses with fake context, and it's happening, I guess, from employees here, faculty that have
been
had.
I have one here, actually. I wanted to show
They're offering jobs to students.
Yeah.
So we've known the students that have clicked on those emails. What are we doing about that?
That one should be the two-factor authentication. But we need to get there. Right now, the two-factor authentication we have is all or nothing. What that means is that when we said, okay, turn it on, every time you walk away from your computer, you come back, you gotta put in the code again. Mm-hmm. Every time, people say, I can't, this is too much. And then people will turn it off immediately. But there are things called conditional MFA, which means that when you click in and you set it up, you say, okay, do you trust this computer? You say, yes, it's my own computer. Okay. Then it will prompt you maybe 3 weeks later, maybe 3 months later, maybe 6 months later, or something like that. And at the same time, it will have enough intelligence that when you are no longer at home and you travel, you go to a hotel room or conference, it pop up immediately, you ask you again, because you see that the condition that you are in has changed. So that's the kind of MFA I want to deploy here. So I want that tool before I bring back the conversation of MFA.
And then, well, the other comment was something like this, even though it was brought to the technology committee, this is something that's district-wide, not just a technology component, or it should have gone through PGC somewhere down the line if something was going to change this draft.
I think
it
did.
But there was a lot of opposition to it. I don't think we had a lot of big choice about it. It wasn't a vote. It was an informational item that was brought up with PGC. Because I remember we all were very concerned.
I know, Lillian, you had a question.
Yeah, but Michael,
I just wanted to show you the email. This is from Karen Cox. She said they sent to me. This is her email. And it's about all these stuff that she's trying to, a friend of hers had died and she wanted to give away all her stuff. And you call this number. You know, it was from Karen. So actually, I was like, oh, this is interesting. So I called the number and they were like, very nice. And they were like, well, yeah, we can get that out too. We just need your credit card for shit. But I knew immediately that was a problem. But it was really her email. So I
forwarded her password got out.
Forwarded to Robert right away. But yeah, and that's three times from different faculty that this has happened to me already.
Yeah. So we need to secure these accounts. You need to secure them.
Okay. It's on the same topic. And some of it has to do with the college-wide discussion that takes place. And in particular on the multi-factor authentication, I was under the impression that that might help with the bad actors, but that that it would impact, that it's not necessarily compatible with some of our other software that we use, and that some of the impacts might be a little bit broader. And I'm hopeful that the
broader impact of those implications would be something that is widely discussed.
Oh, yes. So the way we want to bring those items, the password, the multi-factor authentication, and the training, those three items will be built into an AP. An AP. So the AP, we currently have an AP 8.18. We are rewriting that and then get recirculated for through the governance system for approval before we can do anything.
The I've heard of Duo Mobile, which is for pushes and stuff, which is helpful, but we do actually, and I think of several right now that have faculty that are at the college that have concerns because they don't have a cell phone.
Okay.
So that's something we have to consider.
So about that, you see, this is also a phone in some way.
Yeah.
So what the vendors are doing is that the authenticator app that is on the phone. Okay, so there are a couple of ways to get your code. One is through the SMS. So you the code gets sent to you. But a better way is to use an app called Authenticator app. We do have a Microsoft version of it. We have a Google Authenticator. We have a third one called Authy and so on. All of them generate the code locally inside the app. So that app has a browser version, right? So you can install the app in your on your computer directly, and that will generate the codes that you put inside, right? So that will address a lot of the issue, and you won't need your phone at all.
Okay.
So the code will be generated from your computer, and you can just copy and paste directly.
All right. Well, thank you for. Oops. One more.
Just start.
So we have. I currently have my CSF.edu email that is in Microsoft. I have my @mail.edu and I have a .gmail.com. They're all City College. The last two I never use. I mean, I'm not registered as a student right now, so I'm not needing the @mail, and which is what all my students have in Canvas. So why so many emails, and what are we are we staying with Google? Are we staying with Microsoft? Are we doing both?
Yeah, I have an answer for you. So that's a question I've been asking ever since I got here. My thought is that Google came in first as a legacy email when we were going to the cloud, and then Microsoft follows. What happened in the market is that later on, Google stayed with K-12. And then Microsoft stayed with higher education, and the market was divided. So a lot of the colleges, 4 years colleges that jumped first went to Google, they migrated. Just about a couple of hours ago, I was in a massive meeting with various engineers talking about how, if we wanna do it, how we can plan that migration. And again, my thinking is that first, those are too many identities. No, that doesn't work. We can't build anything on top of that. One person, one identity. That's how we move forward. So my thinking is that first, I'm gonna do a proof of concept project on the identity side. We'll do whatever we need to do. We'll design, let's suppose we do a migration. What will that look like? We'll set up all the codes, and then we'll do a proof of concept with a small pilot group, and we migrate them. We note that, we see what it look like, and then I'll come back to the community and tell the community this is what we need to do, but it's gonna be painful. So here are the pain points.
Right.
Yeah. So that's the plan.
I'm sure I have more questions, but we need to go on.
Okay. All right, thank you. I did want to give opportunity for public comment on this item. Do you have any?
I do want to mention that City College's website does have things on cybersecurity, general knowledge, things that Patrick talked about, so that you can kind of get yourself smart about it. You can go onto the ITS webpage and under cybersecurity, there's 7 or 8 pages that really talk about phishing, and they talk about what you can do and what happens if you think you got hacked, what do you do? So there, we have some resources, just FYI.
Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. See, I'm just going to check. There you go. Aren't any hands raised. So we're going to go on to the next item, which is recommendation to extend CCSF's existing education master plan through spring of 2027. And I know this is a first presentation, but it is noted as possible action should folks be so inclined to make a recommendation. I know that we do have Dean Murray here. We are promoting her as a panelist now.
Hi.
How are you?
I am good. I am actually in my car because I am on my way back from Sacramento. Actually, ironically, I've been in a data governance advisory work group, a statewide work group all day. With one of Patrick's good colleagues, Jim Temple from College of the Canyons. We co-chair the statewide group. So I've been in conversations much akin to the conversations that you all have just been having. So happy to see City College being on top of these things. Right. So anyway, that is why I'm in my car.
Safe to give your update now?
Yes, I am pulled over. I pulled over specifically for this. Okay. But I'm operating from my phone, so I'm glad that you can hear me. So yes, I am here. So the planning committee, which is one of the council's committees, and I happen to chair it. We did approve a recommendation. And that is why it is here for the council. So the planning committee approved this extension as a recommendation to move forward here to the council for consideration. A couple things. The current education master plan goes through 2025. Obviously, there's no way we'll have a new plan in place by the end of December. And there are some things that we really need to look at. And I'm happy to say that Associate Vice Chancellor Alberto Vasquez is a member of the planning committee this year, newly, and it's a great opportunity for us to really work on the integration between facilities and our overarching education master plan, or what we may end up calling education strategic plan. So relationship to facilities, technology will also be a part of that. So really big picture, where is the college going? And having time to bring data forward that would inform those conversations and really have those conversations to come out the other side with a really robust education strategic plan. Meanwhile, we do have a plan in place right now that is functioning and can continue to function for the interim period of time. And I do know, just and folks who have read through the board materials, the chancellor has already shared this in her chancellor report with the board, that this is the intention. So I think the purpose for me being here today is it would be great to have an official recommendation from PGC, and also it's going to be important for PGC to be informed about the process going forward for the development of the new plan.
Thank you, Dr. Murray, go ahead.
I was just wondering if it's typical to extend an existing plan. Have we done this in the past? And
We have definitely done it in the past, and colleges and districts up and down the state do it all the time. Yeah. And I mean, it's not what we hope to do, but it often happens. You know, leadership transitions, other projects take priority, of all kinds of reasons.
Okay. I'm sorry, and you probably said this, but would there be some type of prioritization of ongoing efforts, like in the form of a transition plan that would replace or be something in the segue, or just the existing
plan as is? Just the existing plan as is. There's no segue plan per se. And part of that is really the structure of the current master plan. So one of the things, let's see if I can put this in the chat. I have this queued up here at the side of the road. And it's not working, but I can read it off. So our current education master plan has things like, as our overarching goals, improve the student experience. Obviously something that we still want to keep front and center. And things like the Student Affairs Action Plan, you know, connect to that. Institutionalized equity, our student equity plan, which is up for its second read at the board, directly connects to that. And I just lost my note. Improving communications, strengthening credit and non-credit programs. So the AEP presentation that's coming up as the next agenda item connects directly to that. So the way that our current, couch that even further, perhaps the way that our current education master plan works is to make sure that all of the student support plans and the infrastructure plans stay connected to those larger goals. I suspect that the next iteration plan is going to look a little bit different, with a stronger connection into facilities, with a stronger connection into technology. Both of those are connected to our current plan, but in terms of getting more future focused, a little bit like the last presentation, I think the new plan may end up being structured a little bit differently. And that's the kind of conversation that we need to have. And in fact, the planning committee has some homework between now and our next meeting in December. All of the members of the planning committee are going to be looking at planning systems at other colleges and districts up and down the state. We do this periodically to just see if there are other examples out there that we want to pull from. And there'll be a work group that will be looking at that. So that's maybe a long-winded answer, but just to say that's part of why there isn't a transition plan, is that in fact all of those other plans, like the student equity plan, in a way are our transition plans. Those are the plans that we're really leaning on, and that's where the action is while we're developing the next plan.
Got it. Councilmember Braborn,
just a quick question. What happens if we don't officially approve extending it?
So if there isn't official approval, I mean, I don't.
From this body, I mean, yeah. Would it just go to the board anyway, or?
Yes, I think it probably would. That would be the chancellor's call. And it is, as I mentioned already, noted on the board that is the intention. Because frankly, I mean, the chancellor just started and there's no way that she could have led the development of a new plan in the short time that she's been here. So, it's really a question of how we move forward.
Thank you. Can I make a motion?
You may.
Okay. I move that we approve. What's the continuance of the
extension? 2-year extension of the
extension
education master plan.
2 years.
Second.
For our
All right. It's been moved by Councilmember Bravewoman and seconded by Councilmember Snyder that we extend the existing education master plan through spring of 2027. Any further discussion on that? Yes, Councilmember Brandt.
Yeah, I just have a process and procedure question. Is it typical to do that on the first time that we're discussing it?
Agendize as possible action because of the expediency of needing to kind of.
When does this need to be approved by?
I believe that it is part of the chancellor's upcoming report. So we're just trying to connect, and the board is hearing about it, to actual implementation and also remaining, you know, having an active plan. This seems possible.
Yes. Were there, sorry.
Go ahead.
Did you have something?
No.
Were there any attachments as a part of this item? Because I know that Dean Mary was talking about something that she could see that we couldn't see. It's
probably the existing master.
It's the existing plan that's up on the website. That's been up on the website. Okay. There is a tentative timeline, and I did not, for the development of the new plan, I did not bring it today because it's not really ready yet, but I would love to bring that back at a future meeting. So again, really the focus being, not so much how do we extend this plan, because we really have to, because it's November 2025, but how do we work toward our next plan, and what are the things that people are hoping to see? How do folks want to be connected to that planning process? And the timeline is really about how that development process, how we would use the time in the next 2 years. I would love to be able to talk with council about that at a future meeting.
Yes, Councilmember Hall.
What's the typical time frame to develop a brand new EMP?
2 years is pretty typical. I would say 1 to 3 years. You know, one year being. A lot of times with a 1 year plan, it would be a consultant led plan. So we really like to do more of it in house, maybe with some consultant support on specific types of external data. You can do a quick plan, but often it ends up being a shelf document, quite frankly. If you do, you know, taking 3 years, sometimes you don't want to take 3 years for a plan that's going to be, you know, a 3 year plan. I thought you were going to ask what's the typical timeline for a education master plan or education strategic plan, and that can also vary a lot as well. So 3, 5, 10 years, sometimes even a little bit longer. So I'm sure that will be another very good point of discussion as we move into the development stage for the next plan, the successor plan, as we've been calling it.
Other questions, comments, or discussion? Members of the public, any questions, comments? Right. I'm not seeing any, so we will go ahead and do a roll call vote on approving the recommendation to extend.
Anna Brett?
Aye.
Camila Kong?
Yes.
Nilenton? Not here. Malandani Villalobos?
Aye.
David Dangoro? J.R. Hall?
Aye.
Maria Salasa Collin?
Not here.
Michael Snyder?
Aye.
Mary Bridgewoman?
Aye.
Claudia Fox? Not here. Lillian Mahua Doc?
Yes.
Bill Reyes?
Aye.
Ms. Coffey?
Yes.
Cynthia Dorr?
Aye.
Joel Lestra, not here. And Lisa Kamilkin?
Yes. Any opposed? I don't think so. And no abstentions. So it is recommended that we, or we're moving a recommendation forward to extend the existing education master plan through 2027, and we will forward that recommendation to the chancellor. Thank you, Dean Murray.
Thank you so much. I'll get back on the road, but I'll listen in to the rest of the meeting.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. Done, right? We're going to go on to item 8.3, the adult education needs assessment. This is an information item being presented to us by Stephen Chenard. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you. So actually, we have our West End team here, but I wanted to give the context of what this needs assessment was. So last year, during fall and spring, we were working on our California Adult Education Plan, 3-year plan. And as part of that plan, we did some needs assessments. So internally, I worked with my team to do an internal needs assessment, really around like faculty and staff and some of our internal stakeholders. But we issued an RFP and solicited an outside agency to conduct an external needs assessment plan, and that was West Ed. And so it was really to give a lay of the landscape of what is happening in San Francisco adult education category. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jessica Keach and Ed Saville. Andrew, I can't even say your, I'm sorry. I am so tongue-tied right now. Because I probably have not said your name aloud before. Saville Burrow?
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm sorry. After a year, I was just like, Andrick. So apologies. Thank you. And David Maduli.
Thank you so much. We actually have a slide deck. So if it's possible, I can go ahead and share my screen. We'll walk through just the high level findings from the needs assessment, but you all have the full needs assessment. We encourage you to take a look at that. It's pretty long, so we won't spend time going through that in depth today. We'll keep it pretty high level. So first, I just want to say thank you. Thank you, Stephanie, and thank you all for having us here today and really for this opportunity to share this work with PGC. My name is Jessica Keach, and I'm a senior researcher at West Ed, and I am joined by my colleague, Edric, who had the opportunity to conduct site visits and engage with CCSF partners on site throughout this project. We also have another team member, his name is David, and he was able to engage on site as well. Our team conducted this assessment between November 2024 and June 2025, and we are here today to share the highlights with you all. So let's get started. Our project goal was to develop an equity-focused, research-informed, and comprehensive needs assessment study that advances equity, opportunity, and success for adult learners, both your current students and your potential students in the community. And throughout this process, we engaged a needs assessment advisory team to provide oversight, make recommendations. They also co-interpreted data alongside us throughout this process. It included folks from non-credit ESL, transitional studies, the Office of Research and Planning, and outreach, among many others. We facilitated 5 sessions with that group throughout this process, and together that team created a vision for adult learners. And I just want to share that with you before we get started. So that co-created vision is that the San Francisco Adult Education Consortium is the community's central resource for lifelong learning pathways where every adult has the opportunity to flourish academically, professionally, and personally, equipping them to contribute positively as engaged community members, workers, and family members. So our hope is that this assessment can really support you all in cultivating that vision. And I will turn it over to my colleague, Edric, who will talk a little bit about the process that we went through.
Yeah. So we collected data from a variety of sources. We started with a review of relevant documentation, such as the annual and the 3-year SF Adult Education Consortium plans, City College's own strong workforce program strategic plans. We really wanted to work with, you know, work that you've already done internally, as well as work you may have done with previous consultants or researchers. We also conducted a landscape scan of local organizations serving a similar adult population in San Francisco. So this was one of the ways that we tried to understand the perspective of prospective students. And then at City College, our main data sources were tours of the centers, those CAPE stakeholder focus groups, and a survey of current student, non-credit students. So here's a breakdown of the respondents for that current student survey. We had almost 1,400 students respond in 7 different languages, both online and on paper. I was lugging the paper surveys across San Francisco to bring them to Stephanie's office. And we could not have administered or tabulated them without the cooperation of department chairs, faculty, staff. So thank you for all of that. Like Jessica said, the full report has a lot more detailed information about methodology, analyses, and findings, including a regional labor market demand analysis. So you should read the full report, but for today, we will be focusing on the recommendation section.
Thanks, Edric. Okay, I will get us started with recommendation one. And as Edric mentioned, there is kind of a robust compilation of findings in the report. We've integrated just a few high-level data points throughout the recommendation section, but there's more detail we encourage you to take a look at. So this first recommendation really focuses around pursuing opportunities to meet the demand for ESL and career education programs and services. And this recommendation comes from a host of information, right? The census data demonstrates that there is a large population that could really benefit from ESL services that's not currently being met. We also heard from students, faculty, and staff and community partners that there was a real need to expand ESL programs. You can see here from the student survey that there was a really high interest in ESL. Many of the students who completed the survey were ESL students. It's, of course, CCSF's non-credit's most popular program, but 87% of those students indicated that interest in ESL. There's also a growing interest in career-focused ESL programming. So you might consider exploring different opportunities through integrated education and training models. And we had community partners and faculty and staff discuss the need for increased non-credit CTE offerings. There was mention of pre-apprenticeship programs and short-term training opportunities, including the need for healthcare training programs. And that aligned with the labor market data that we looked at, where there were some identified healthcare occupations that could be really strong living wage occupations and that could align between non-credit and credit. And so there might be opportunities to increase that collaboration between non-credit and credit and explore areas like the healthcare technology program. The second recommendation was to formalize and share clear pathways to support student success in transition. So in the survey, 89% of students said that having a list of the courses that they need to complete their educational goal is extremely or somewhat important. Right? And that gets at that kind of education planning. We also heard from interviewees that students are often unfamiliar with ESL course sequences. So really clarifying those could be helpful. And then faculty, staff, and community organizations reported really strong interest in formalizing pathways through and from non-credit to credit coursework. So really bridging that gap between non-credit and credit. You have a student here who was quoted as saying, I would be happy if the information were easier to understand and more tailored to my needs.
The third recommendation is around increasing supports for digital literacy and foundational computer skills. We heard from faculty, from staff, and from community partners that current students would benefit from training around, foundational computer skills would help them with online learning. But also we heard from that a lack of training around computer systems is a barrier for prospective students when they're trying to register or trying to learn more about opportunities at the college. Interestingly, that among the current students we surveyed, the vast majority of them noted that they register for classes in person. So even among students who have a connection to the college, they're not registering online, they're registering in person. We also heard a lot from faculty, staff, and program partners that there's been no programming around these foundational computer skills, digital literacy at the college since the removal of the non-credit business program, which used to fill that niche. The fourth recommendation is around fostering external partnerships with local organizations. So across our conversations with local organizations, leaders expressed that they really want to be more connected with City College. This came up like unprompted among the community organizations that we spoke with. In particular, they floated the idea of having representatives from the college regularly visit their spaces in person to share upcoming offerings or opportunities at the college, especially around registration time. Staff at local orgs already devote a lot of time to helping their clients get connected with the college, including working through online registration. So there could be a big benefit to having a train-the-trainer kind of model. And then on the next slide, just to illustrate how much the college is held in high esteem in the city, one of the community partners shared this quote. They said, "Recent arrivals or recent immigrants in the city see City College as their livelihood, as their place. They get to know people, build their own community. It's a strong sense of belonging because of the care from the teachers and also the fellowship from other students."
Thanks, Edric. So this is our last recommendation, and this is around establishing institutional structures and practices that really elevate adult education students' needs and facilitate effective responses. Our interviews and our focus groups really surfaced opportunities to improve faculty professional development offerings. This conversation centered on supporting new faculty and understanding and meeting the diverse needs of adult ed students. Some ideas that came up were to provide some kind of standard orientation and training for all new instructors. It was also mentioned that you could offer training on working with students of diverse backgrounds, and really the desire to shift away from a reactive request-based system to a more intentional system of professional development. There was also discussion around the need for dedicated non-credit adult education leadership, potentially a dean of adult education. And then finally, we really found that there are opportunities to strengthen partnerships between non-credit and credit and various support teams. So some examples of how that could be done that were surfaced in our discussions were non-credit faculty inviting representatives from the workforce development team into their classrooms, partnering between non-credit and credit to explore those career education opportunities that we discussed a few moments ago, and then really just making sure that non-credit students are aware of and able to access those supportive services. So that was a lot of information in a short period of time. And like we mentioned, the report really offers many more insights, and we encourage you to take a look at it. For now, we'll take just a couple of minutes to see if there are any reflections, if anything we shared really stands out to you in particular, or if there are any questions that we might be able to answer.
All right, council members that have questions. Yes.
So actually, I don't have a question. I have a couple of points. First, my first one is just thank you. This was a super focused presentation, and I really appreciated that. And the second thing was informational. The Academic Senate Executive Council yesterday passed a resolution encouraging the college to find ways to implement some of the recommendations of the West A study, and also to create a faculty coordinator position that could begin to start piloting some of the at least some of the coordination that needs to happen, and to align the process of the funding with the RRP handbook and with our kind of faculty coordinator, administrator liaison system, to really kind of raise up the concerns of the non-credit portion of the house. So, and that passed yesterday. We're still working on the coordinator description, but just to kind of follow that. Yep. Thank you.
Other council members? Yes, Council Member Hall.
It's great presentation that we need these things. Are there like plans that go with this? This is if we wanted to do whatever, whichever one of those five recommendations, is there like stuff that we can actually action, or is this like we have to go and develop it once we sort of agree that we want to do something? I'm just wondering how far the planning of it goes from this presentation.
Yeah, so the purpose of the needs assessment was really to identify needs and put forth some preliminary recommendations. But Stephanie, do you want to share about plans from moving from this research to action?
Yes, thank you. So this aligns with our three-year plan. So with the CAPE funds, that's the California Adult Education Program funds, we have a high-level three-year plan that we put together. However, there are some really concrete recommendations here, and we are working on putting together an internal implementation team, something that's cross-functional and interdisciplinary, so that these recommendations get some teeth to them. So there will be a planning process. I mean, there is, but we're trying to put together, you know, again, an internal team to make sure that this doesn't just kind of float into the ether.
Any other council member questions?
Yes. I'd like to follow up. So it will, the planning also include sort of what it might cost to do some of these things? I know Lillian talked about a whole position. Are there more? Yeah, I mean, but I don't know how, you know, big or wide this thing goes. So, or what the depth of implementing any or all of these recommendations, what will it involve? Is that also part of this thing? You made these recommendations, or there are parts, let's say, and you need to do X, Y, or Z, and it's going to cost you roughly this or that, to give us a sense of how big or small these recommendations are in sort of the grand scheme of things. I get that we need something, but I don't get the sense of, you know, how much, how hard, how long. I don't have any of those senses based on this presentation.
So that will also be up to the college to really determine like what the feasibility is, and to work within our CAPE budget as well. So that is part of our planning process. Right, so West Ed isn't going to probably, they're not gonna be able to scope what the cost is. That's really up to us to figure it out and determine how to best, you know, to get these, to apply what we can and where it makes sense best in the college. And I'm sorry, I had to like lock up the downtown campus. So forgive me while I'm on my phone right now for this meeting.
Okay. Everybody's multitasking. Yes. They're, and Stephanie, please, I don't want to step on any toes, but I wanted to answer a part of the planning is that when the Senate passed this resolution that says we want to help support these plans, and there could be a faculty coordinator, and this could be kind of wrapped into our already college-wide defined planning processes. So we do have a process through which funds get looked at and the needs get assessed, and the 10 plus one parts go to the Senate, and it goes, you know, it collaborates and coordinates with any other necessary areas. So there is a built-in kind of planning process at the college that supports things like this. And so the resolution from the Senate was, yes, let's use that process and try to do it. And for how much it costs, and Stephanie, you're the one with all the dollar money, but it's a categorical fund that comes from the state. And so they're looking at what can we do with these funds that we have that the state says are for the purpose of non-credit adult education.
Right. Thanks, Lillian. That was really nicely put. And yes, I love a good spreadsheet, especially if it's color coordinated. So that will go into, you know, again, part of the planning process and looking at where, what the costs are, and kind of putting it into my spiffy spreadsheet to make sure that we have the CAPE funds that will move these initiatives forward.
Any other council member questions, or we'll open it up to members of the public. I'm not seeing any, and I just had a quick, I guess, process question. Is this slide deck that was just shown the same that was submitted for this item, or do we need to get a copy of this to host online?
I'm not sure. I think that the what you all shared was the full report. I'm happy to share this via email. Stephanie has it as well, so you can post it.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much for your time and presentation today.
No problem. Thank you all so much.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we're going to move on now back to our agenda. And sorry, we have a technology committee date.
Thank you. So I joined you in September to give you an update, and I'm happy to provide an update now. So if you could scroll to the first slide.
Technology.
That was
So these are the draft objectives that the technology committee has created. Unfortunately, Joe and I have been spending Tuesday afternoons together, so I haven't been at the technology committee in September and October. So these are not passed yet, but we will be back next month or this month, November. And these are the objectives. And you can see one of these relates to Patrick's presentation, which was on cybersecurity. One of the big topics of conversation is Gen AI. And so we have some first reads of recommendations for using Gen AI for employees and recommendations for meeting assistance. This is something, it's interesting because when we present what's going on with the technology committee, sometimes it's sort of at the end and like we're all tired. And so I don't know if this should be maybe at the top of a meeting sometime, because this is really important. I'm just thinking of our conversation about Wi-Fi, and that was a really big topic at the technology committee. And this is a really important topic. We can agendize it separately, and then I could have Associate Dean Kinsler come. We could talk about it more. So that's a big topic. The links are in there as well. And then the last slide, or do you want me to pause right now? Okay, and then I'll go straight to you. And then the last slide is the technology committee has been looking at a lot of new platforms. Program Pathways Mapper, which is fantastic. It's like sits on the website, and if a student is interested in a program, they can see on the website all the courses that are required. They don't have to become a student and meet with a counselor. All of those are great things, but sometimes they just want to get a sense of what they have to do before they enroll. So Program Pathways Mapper directly connects to CricuNet. It's going to be wonderful. There's also a new online orientation platform that Associate Dean Romano is super excited about. And we got to see that. And that went over very well. The technology committee loosely endorsed those as well. And then ITS brought some informational items. I was not there, and there was Joe. JR was there, and if there's questions, maybe I'll point to you. But information about a new student portal and a new student help desk. So that is our technology report. Heather.
Yeah, thank you. I just wasn't sure if we still had quorum, and I think part of what...
Oh.
Yeah, but I didn't want to cut you off.
But is that what you were counting earlier?
I was. Oh, okay, sorry. So she's on it.
And we did lose one more person. We needed nine.
Do I have to come
back? Yes. Because are you asking us to approve the...
What do we...
I'm not asking for any
to call back.
Yeah.
There's no action. It's just like, this is... We make a lot of decisions in the technology committee that impact a lot of people, and so
yeah. Got it.
Oh no, I thought we were approving like the updated technology plan. I think that I should.
Yeah.
Maybe one action.
Verify.
Could you get new monitors?
I do that to see if someone's paying attention.
Those are the new monitors.
Yeah, oh, that's right. That's right. Those are the new ones. That's right.
The monitors at downtown. Anyway, just like the one I use in the computer lab.
There you go.
Not in the library.
I'm totally.
Are there any questions or comments from council members here or? Yes,
I do want to mention that AI thing, even though it's near the end, that thing took up a huge portion of the meeting that we talk about, because it affects so many different things, right? It's not only student use, but it's also faculty use, and it's how staff might use it and how we need to look at AI. It's very informative. Cynthia's team on OLET, very knowledgeable on the subject. And brought up a lot of different things of how it could be used or misused. And it's very interesting on, because you can easily see, you could easily just make a snap decision that it's like, it's a bad thing. But then they talk about the nuances of it and how it could be used and how it can help people and how it could be really be used badly and how we might want to try to counter that. And it's about education and it's a super complicated.
Thank you, JR. Because the online learning folks spent all summer developing a course for employees. And an email went out, I think, last week or the week before. So we encourage everyone to take that course. There's a tendency to say, oh yeah, let's jump on board. Let's use AI for everything. And then if you're not, you're like a Luddite. Well, we want to be really careful because there's a lot of privacy concerns when it comes to AI and students, and just taking a student paper and dropping it into ChatGPT is a violation of FERPA in many ways, because that's personally identifiable information that could be in this paper that the student has written. So, and we hear all sorts of stories from faculty with the best of intentions and clear FERPA violations. And we also want to be able to teach our students that. So OLED is going to start doing a whole program for digital literacy, and the librarians are involved. Digital literacy usually lives in libraries. We're so lucky to have the online learning folks partner with the librarians. And I think it would be a great topic, as JR is saying, to bring back to PGC, because there's education is a perfect target for educational technology profit makers to come in, and we don't want to sell our soul just to make AI easier for everyone. So I'm warning you now, write it down in the minutes. We have to be very careful. Yes, Jacob.
I just want to make another thing that I think that kind of came up in the thing is, it's sometimes it's just so simple as we sign up for AI, be the reader, and all of a sudden it shows up in all our meetings because we gave it permission to our calendar. Yes. And we don't really realize it. It's in meetings with us, and people ask, did you want us to be in the meeting? I'm like, well, I didn't know anything about it. But because we signed up and said yes without really reading it, we gave AI a whole bunch of permissions that we're unaware of how it's going to be used,
and content to intellectual property.
Right? And it not only does it record everything about the meeting, it gives really good summary, and it can be used. It's very well used if used properly. But we gave all of our information, and maybe some things that are maybe confidential to our college, gets all recorded into that AI. It uses it however it's going to use, and we don't know how it's going to be used. So,
and we're not profiting. They're profiting off the backs of our students, and they're profiting off of us.
Right. They use it however we don't know how it's going to be used.
Mm-hmm.
It's convenient. It could be convenient, but we don't know. And we said yes without really knowing. So that's just one example. I just wanted to say.
Thank you. So we hope that the committee is interested, or the council is interested, in exploring this topic in the future.
Absolutely. Wanted to open it up to members of the public who also might have questions or comments, if there are any. Not seeing any hands raised. Thank you for your update.
Sure. If members of the public are attending online, how would
they be able to participate?
They would raise their
hand.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's not like in board meetings where you have to be brought over as a panelist? Or
no, once they raise their hand, we allow them to talk and then it allows them to speak.
Okay, I just wasn't
It's magic. All right. So we have future agenda items listed already of things that we are bringing back. And this is an opportunity for council members to recommend future agenda items. You can do that now. Yes.
I'm sorry I wasn't here at the last meeting, and I apologize for that. But there's a agenda item that I'd like to put on, and that is an update on the building plans or the remodeling plans around campus.
Oh, around campus in general.
Oh, yeah, in general.
Yes.
For the other buildings, like for the other
cloud and Science Cloud, any kind of the facilities. I just think, I'm very concerned for departments, for the chairs and those, for the faculty and those, for the students in those departments, about the conditions, planning, what's moving forward. I'm wondering about the budgets, the plans, the original plans for the renovations that were supposed to take place, and how much funds actually are left.
Got it.
For any of that kind of thing. And so what's kind of happened?
Okay. Noted. Anyone else have an item? And you're also both online, can put them in the chat. And anyone can email pgc@ccsf.edu, ideally a little more than a week before our meeting, at least, if not sooner, so that the agenda review committee has a chance to discuss it and agendize it. But you can submit items. Yes.
Yeah, sorry. I just wanted to ask a question about what quorum is for PGC.
It is not.
Okay, is that listed on the agenda?
It may not be, but that's the count that we always
Use.
Because we have 16 members and we need 50% plus one.
Yes. And it doesn't matter what constituency.
It does not matter.
I just was curious because we list quorum for transparency on our agendas, and I just haven't seen that on other agendas.
You may have heard me speak it when I trolling for nine people to be
sure.
present, but and that's something we can add to the
agenda. And I just want to say, it looked very different when the agenda was posted this time because it's several pages long now and diligent because it's so spread out. But I really appreciated how attendees were broken down by the constituency groups that they're representing, because it's easier to follow, you know, who's here from which constituency groups.
Absolutely. All right. Anything else? I will certainly entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you.